Good evening, everyone. It's good to see you out tonight, and I would welcome you to open your Bible or your Bible app to Psalm 100. We'll start there in just a few minutes. And before we get into the sermon, I hope you'll endure me for just a few moments. As was mentioned this morning, Brother Mike's going to be starting with us at the beginning of the year. I'm extremely excited about him coming to be with us and the work that he's going to be doing here. But for the last 12 years, y'all have put up with me, and we have enjoyed listening to some of the other young men. 12 years. I think it was 2008. Matt and I were talking about it earlier. When they said, hey, would y'all be interested in working with Brother Guy? And so at that time, it was Fred and Charlie and Tommy and Glenn. During that time, we've added Jeff as one of our elders. And so to these five men, I will be eternally grateful. I couldn't have possibly known how much it was going to affect my life, how much it would help me. I hope it's helped me up here. But in every area of my life, how much it's affected me, how much it's helped me to grow. And the opportunities that it's given me, helping me to be a better husband, a better father, and hopefully a better child of God. And so I appreciate all of these men. And also to Brother Guy. Now, if we could go back 12 years and they came and asked you, do you want to work with Al for 12 years? No, don't answer that. I have enjoyed working with Guy. You know, I feel like me and Matt Burns are more alike than any other person that I know, and we don't agree on everything. And Brooke and I have a wonderful marriage, but we don't agree on everything. And this may surprise you, but me and Guy don't agree on everything. But I have a tremendous respect and appreciation for the passion that you have for the gospel. And my generation will not have to endure the things that you and your generation did. And I don't know that we would. So thank you. I appreciate that. I've enjoyed working with the other young guys, and I've always been encouraged. Somebody told me when we first started doing this, I had a gospel preacher talk to me, and he said, competition among preachers exists, and you need to be aware of that. I never felt like I was in competition with any of the other guys. They would stand up here and do a great job, and it encouraged me to give my best because I got to watch them give their best. And I feel like that's the effect the gospel has. When we see somebody else doing something for the Lord, it encourages us, and I want to do a better job myself. And so thank you for them. And to my wife and kids, and the other wives and families who sacrificed time for us to do this, sacrificed personal time, thank you. I appreciate you as well. And everyone here who's shook my hand or hugged my neck or offered a prayer, or any form of encouragement that you've given me, I appreciate it. It has meant a lot. And while we're going to transition, as Brother Mike comes to work with us, it doesn't mean that anything changes. We still got plenty of work to do, all of us, and I look forward to being a part of that work. And the first lesson that I ever did was called Working as Members. And Guy said, you know, I'm going to go back and do some of the old sermons that I've done in the past. And I thought, you know what, I'll go try to do the first one I ever did again. Maybe I'll do a little bit better job, and with a different twist tonight. I want to talk about working members with Thanksgiving. Because it is that time of year, the holiday season. We had Thanksgiving, Christmas is coming up. We spend time with family. We reflect on all the blessings that we have. Outstanding song selection tonight, by the way. I didn't pick Stuart's songs, but he did a really good job when I told him what my topic was. So, with Thanksgiving, where does Thanksgiving show up? In our service to God, where does Thanksgiving show up? Psalm 100 says, shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before Him with joyful singing. Know that the Lord Himself is God. It is He who has made us, not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter His gates with thanksgiving and His courts with praise. Give thanks to Him. Bless His name, for the Lord is good. His loving kindness is everlasting, and His faithfulness to all generations. Where does it show up? Well, we'll pop the top here with in our singing, doesn't it? Doesn't it show up, thanksgiving, in our singing? We'll go and look at a couple of passages here. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19. Singing to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord. Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you. with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Singing with thankfulness. What does that mean, singing with thanksgiving? Well, the melody in our hearts is rooted in thankfulness. Are you thankful when you sing? You know, I got to admit, sometimes I'm just singing because we're all singing. Maybe I'm not as thankful as I should be, and you know, I'm not going to point the blame, but maybe the song selection sometimes, or maybe it's the lyrics of the song, maybe they don't apply today as much as they have in times past, or maybe I'm misinterpreting the lyrics. I really started thinking about this morning. Guy had, "All to Jesus I surrender." Now, the second verse of that song says, "All to Jesus I surrender, humbly at His feet I bow. Worldly pleasures all forsaken." Now, I will ask you, what is a worldly pleasure? God talked about the pleasures of sin, talked about some characters who had really given all. Stephen gave his life. Paul gave his freedom. Right? Talked about Joseph going to prison. And so if we're talking about worldly pleasures as sin, we need to forsake that. But what if we're just talking about the amenities of life? You got a lot, don't you? Worldly pleasures all for... Have you given up all the worldly pleasures of life? Let's say cable television. Do you have Charter? Or DirecTV? Or Dish Network? Or Netflix? Or Amazon Prime? Hulu? YouTube television? Or that new Disney Plus app that is free with your Verizon subscription? No! All the worldly pleasures I've forsaken, I don't have any of those. God, I've given up everything for you. Really? What about a wonderful Savior? In the chorus of that song, he says, "He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock that shadows a dry, thirsty land." That certainly describes the land we live in, doesn't it? It's a dry, thirsty land. I've had the opportunity to go out of this country a couple of times, most recently a couple of months ago. Brooke and I were on a tour bus in Honduras. And I noticed as we traveled, about every 10 miles, there was a fresh water station. You know why, don't you? Because they don't have it in their homes. And so people were carrying pots and jars and jugs to fill up water to carry back to the house. They live in a dry, thirsty land. I got water on tap at the house. If I want water, I go over and turn the faucet on. Or we have a lot of these. To tell you how picky I am, we have some of these bottled waters in the fridge because Brooke likes them cold, and some in the laundry room because I like them at room temperature. Do I live in a dry, thirsty land? No. "God, know thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land." Do you live in a barren land? We had Thanksgiving 10 days ago. What did your table look like? We talked about this some in class. We went around and all the young people talked about what their favorite foods were. "I'm really looking forward to Aunt so-and-so makes this, and Granny makes this, and Mom makes this." We all take a plate home with us. Barren? Is that how you would describe the table? I didn't have anything. Think about all the fruits and vegetables and meats and things that you ate that aren't even in season. Think about those fruits and vegetables that aren't even in season that you had on Thanksgiving. We have so much in our country, but if we don't have it, we'll get it from another country. We have the best of what we have and the best of what they have. I went to the store this afternoon, saw another one of our members shopping there, and they got me some blueberries. And on the cover of the blueberries, it says, "A product of Mexico." I guess we don't have blueberries here, but they got them in Mexico, and now I got them in the fridge at the house. Am I a pilgrim in this barren land? Mansion over the hilltop, though often tempted and tormented and tested, and like the prophet, my pillow a stone. We're all sleeping on rocks, right? You know the thing I hate? When I come to bed and I realize Brooke has my boulder. That is my igneous rock. You have the sedimentary rock. I carved that one just to the shape of my head. No. You don't know how many pillows we have on the bed at the house. I like I had to count. We have pillows for sleeping and decorative pillows and throw pillows, and one little pillow is shaped like a hot dog. I don't even know what it does. We got 9 pillows on the bed, and Brooke asked me the other day, Mom wants to know what you want for Christmas. You know what I said, Matt? I think I need a new pillow. This one doesn't feel right. Tell her I want a pillow that feels right. Like the prophet, my pillow is stone. My pillow's a pillow. And when it's time for bed, we turn the temperature down just like we like it, and I'll get whatever blankets I need and comforters I need, and we'll turn the fan on, get the temperature just right, and then I like a body pillow right here beside me, so I get my body pillow, my sleeping pillow. I'm sleeping pretty comfortably. Are you? And so when I come in and sing to God and say, God, I'm sleeping on a rock, I don't know if I have Thanksgiving like I should. Where could I go living below in this old sinful world? Hardly a comfort can afford. Hardly a comfort can afford? Is that singing with thanksgiving to God? I'm going to take that praise to the throne of God and say, God, I can't afford anything. What are the basic necessities of life? You remember this? I think we learned this like in elementary school. It's food, clothing, shelter, right? Food. Anybody have a glass of milk this morning? Did you have to get out and milk old Bessie to get it? You just open the fridge, right? Eggs. You know, I asked this in class, and one of the kids actually said they did go around collecting eggs. I didn't have to collect any eggs, okay? We had bacon at the house this morning. I didn't have to butcher a pig. Olivia had her milk with about 5 ounces of Hershey syrup in it, and Cal has his milk. He likes his plain. I didn't have to milk the cow. We have food at our house. Do you have food? Do you have a pantry with food in it and a refrigerator with food in it? You know, I remember Will saying in class one time that people in other countries are amazed that when you go into one of our grocery stores, there's an entire aisle of food for the pets. Think about that. An aisle of food for the pets. There are people in the world who've never been into a grocery store. They can't imagine going in and looking at all the fresh produce and everything that they have, and it would really blow their mind to think there's an aisle of food for the pets, because in some of these places, the pet is the food source. You have to milk the pet or collect the eggs from the pet or butcher the pet. Do you have food? Clothing? That's the only pair of clothes you own? I was going to wear a blue jacket tonight. And at 4:30, I got my blue jacket off the hanger and realized there's a button missing. I have to sew the button back on. So I'll just wear the brown jacket tonight. How many clothes you got in your closet? Some probably that you don't even wear, right? We got clothes for every season and every reason and every color. And matching shoes. Right? Clean clothes. If they're not clean, we just throw them in the wash, hit a button, put the soap in, they're clean. We have clothing, don't we? Shelter. You ever refer to your home as a shelter? Where do you live? Well, my shelter's over on Sewell Road. No. I have a nice home. I have a comfortable home. Sure, I'm sure I could look around and find somebody with a bigger home. Say, wow, well, look what he's got. You know how many people in the world don't have a home? They're living homeless? Hardly a comfort can afford. There's hardly a comfort that's been withheld. And so we're going to come into God's house and we're going to offer praise to Him. And I can't even move my lips. Is there an ounce of thanksgiving in my heart if I can't sing to God when I consider how much He has done for me? Do I have thanksgiving at all for what He's done for me? And then on Sunday morning, we're going to give back to God. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have directed the churches of Galatia, so you do also. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper. The easy to read version says, as you can from what you are blessed with. We just talked about what we're blessed with, right? And I didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg to talk about our blessings. And so now it's time to give back to God as He's blessed me. What's a good number? Hey, Brooke, look in your wallet and see if we got a 10 in there. That'll cover it. Hey, thanks for everything you did, God. Here's a little bit back. What is seriously a reasonable number? Now, it's a different number for all of us. I don't know what your circumstances are. But looking at my circumstances, what is a good number for me to give back? I mentioned that cable TV and all those apps and things that we pay for every month. Am I giving more to my entertainment than I am to the Lord's work? That might be a good question for me to ask myself. And maybe I need to look at some of the money I spend things on for me and see how it compares to what I give back to God. Considering how blessed we are, could you give an extra dollar? Like, that doesn't really seem like a lot of money, a dollar. Could you give an extra dollar? So we got 250 people, and that's extra $250 a week, and $250 a week times 52 weeks is $13,000. And that don't really seem like a whole lot of money. So I was talking to someone not too long ago, and I came to understand that in India, the gospel growth in India is among the fastest in the world right now. There's just a lot of poverty in India. And so when you come in with a message of hope, people listen. How many missionaries do you think you could support for a year with $13,000? How many missionaries for an entire year do you think you could support in India for $13,000? 9. Because we each give an extra dollar a week. Talk about being blessed. Think about what that annual wage is. You think you don't make much money? 9 men can live full-time for a year off $13,000? I think $13,000 is about our poverty level in this country. How blessed have we been that we could use this to aid in preaching the gospel? In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, Paul says, "I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy, and in my every prayer for you all, in view of your participation in the gospel." How did they help? Chapter 4, verse 16. "For even in Thessalonica, you sent a gift more than once for my needs." How did they participate? Financially. Financially, with what they gave. And he says, "I'm thankful for that." 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. "Each one must do just as he's purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." You know, when I consider everything God's done for me, all the blessings that He's given to me, I should want to share. I should be thankful that I had the opportunity to help someone else and that I can help the gospel work. What about with thankfulness as we think about each other, relative to each other? Sending a card, calling someone, making a visit. Paul tells Timothy, he says, "Onesiphorus often refreshed me. He eagerly searched for me and found me." Here's Paul writing to Timothy there. This is 2 Timothy. It's kind of a letter at the end of Paul's life. He realizes his life's kind of about to end. And he says, "This man often refreshed me. He searched for me. He found me." As he's reflecting on life, this means something to him. And he's thankful. What about in our prayers? Pray for one another that you may be healed. And we have those sick on the overhead and in the bulletin. And those that go out over the text message or the call tree. And just taking a moment to stop and take that person's name to God in prayer. It makes a difference. Because we're thankful for that person. We appreciate that person, and we want to exhort or encourage, as Hebrews 3:13 says, each other daily. And when someone isn't doing what they should, because we're thankful for them, we want to try to restore them. Galatians 6 and verse 1. Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. In a spirit of gentleness. This is an example I used in my first sermon. I couldn't think of a better one, so I'm going to use it again. What do you do when you got an old table at the house and it's gotten dusty or something like that, the wood's kind of faded, and you want to restore it? Well, you get a product here like this Restore Finish. And it says on there, you know, you just get a nice clean soft cloth and start wiping it on the table or the wood, and you can see there in the picture it's already making a difference. But maybe you're not patient, right? And maybe rather than using a nice clean soft cloth, you decide to pour some of it on the head of a sledgehammer. A jackhammer would work just about the same as a sledgehammer would. And I'll just beat this product into the wood. What is that going to do? Ruin the table. We all understand that's a simple illustration. And yet sometimes as Christians, someone falls away from the gospel, and we take the gospel to them, but maybe our approach isn't the soft, gentle touch, is it? Maybe we're a little too harsh with them. We need to be considerate. Why? Because he actually says, considering yourself, how do you want somebody coming to you, and it may be this very person that you're restoring who has to come back to you, help you one day, how do you want someone approaching you? I'm thankful for that person. I want them here with us. And so, however long it takes, we're going to continue to work and polish and restore that person. What about hospitality? With thankfulness. How did first century Christians stick together? You know, you go there to Acts chapter 2 and it says, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. They just enjoyed each other's company. They hosted, they attended. Some opened their homes, and those maybe who didn't have a home to open came to be with those who opened their homes. They were thankful for what God had given them. They enjoyed the pleasure of each other's company. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13, encourage one another day after today. 1 Peter 4, verse 9, here the NIV says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. What he's saying is God has given us so many blessings. And as a good steward of those blessings and with thankfulness, I want to use those for my brothers and sisters. And for anyone. What doors would that open? We want to do these things not so that we're glorified, but that God be glorified. That He get the credit. Or teaching the lost. You know, teaching can be done in a lot of different ways. You have classes or conversations, one-on-one, like Philip and the eunuch there in Acts 8, training up children, Proverbs 22. All those epistles that Paul wrote, we're still learning from those, bulletin articles. Just being an example. Or even in our singing, teaching and admonishing one another. You know, you don't think about, or at least I don't always think about, when I'm singing, maybe we have a visitor, maybe this is the first time ever being in a church, who knows, and we're singing songs, and the lyrics from the song teach a message. And so I'm teaching just by singing. And I'm singing with thankfulness. We thought about that? What experience could you share with somebody that might help them? It used to be that years ago there were sermons on personal work. How we can go out and you know, knock on doors and get people to come to church. What about just inviting somebody to church? You know, we got a singing coming up. Jeff mentioned it this morning, and I think we've got some flyers printed out, and we'll send some flyers to congregations, and maybe they'll put it on their announcements. I think it's been on Facebook. I think we're going to run it in the paper, and all of that will do some good. All of that will do some good. But what Jeff said at the table this morning you be here and invite somebody to come with you will make a bigger difference than all of those things combined. If all of us do that, we'll have to pull out chairs. You be here, bring somebody with you. Because we're going to have 150 or 200 visitors show up. Because we always do. You be here and bring someone, and that will be enough. Take advantage of the opportunities you get. I don't know, I guess it was about 14 years ago, I was sitting in a barber chair, and we'd been looking for somewhere to go to church, and Tammy, for about the sixth time, said, "Would you please just come visit with us? We have a new building." And I remember telling Brooke, if we don't go to church with her at least once, she is never going to stop asking. And we came, and I liked it. And I'm still here, and I'm raising my family here. How much difference does it make to just invite somebody to church? We got that singing coming up. Invite somebody to church. We got a new preacher starting. Invite somebody to church. You know, we've had a few people who left in the years past, and over the last couple of months, I've had an opportunity to see three families and just out and about run into them. All three families, I told them, "Hey, we got a new preacher coming. Why don't you come hear him when he starts?" You know what all three said? Okay. Now, I don't take it as any kind of personal reflection on me that they didn't want to be here tonight, and I'm sure the others don't take it that way either, and it shouldn't be taken that way. Okay? But when you have a period of transition, like we're about to have, it opens up an opportunity for fresh conversation. It's an opportunity to say, "Hey, this is going to be different, and I'm really excited about it, and I want you to be here with me." And people will respond to that. How many people can you think of that you would like to have here with us? Mike's starting in January. We've got that singing coming up in January. We can build a lot of momentum going into the new year if we just ask. Ask. Because we are thankful for everything that our God has done for us. Because we want to give back. Create an opportunity. I'm going to fast forward here a little bit. What if everybody did only what you did in this church? What kind of church would we be? If everybody did only what you did, add to your abilities, get out of your comfort zone, and let's get to work. We've got plenty to do. Let's work together as members so that we can be a stronger body. I appreciate your attention this evening. If you would take out the songbook and turn to the invitation song. I'm already forgetting comforts. Take out your songbook. You ain't pulled out a songbook in 5 years. It'll be on the overhead, okay? If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, why not take advantage of this opportunity that we have tonight? Why not be baptized for the remission of sins? If we can help you with that, if we can help you with anything else, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.